I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to wake up with a nice cup of morning roast. Featuring
the Fillmore's finest, Monte Hill. The pride of the Excelsior, Joe Butcher, Boy Shasky.
Take him out.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, the morning roast.
This new setup right here in the sales room, the conference room. We can see the big buildings in San Francisco. The sun is out. Mm-hmm. Good morning to everybody out there getting off their graveyard shift. Business is booming with Baldy in town. So you know the overnight dancers are lining up, baby. The graveyard shift workers, the truck drivers. It is big time money time. Chiefs and Niners on Sunday. We got the Warriors in their final preseason game at Chase against the LA Lakers. See if they could go 6-0. Warriors are in town. We got a lot going on here. Baseball playoffs. Baldy, of course, is here. Shasky's in the building looking like he just played 18 innings. Did you play for the Yankees last night? You got the where's that jersey from, man? That's nice.
This is our city little baseball program jersey. Doesn't it look good?
Yeah.
The Cardinal hat.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so, you know, it brings me, we were playing that the Kawhi Leonard stuff, and I know you want to get into Chiefs Niners. We're going to get into that. We're going to get into the coaching trees. But I do want to pick your brain on something. Kawhi Leonard, basketball player for the Clippers. Baldy, I'm sure you've heard of him.
Won a championship with Toronto.
Absolutely. Yep. He's an absolute legend killer. The guy's body is telling him he needs to, you know, not
back
play
off
anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a difficult thing for a lot of athletes to look in the mirror and say it's time. I guess that brings me to Tua. The whole Tua situation. And I've been thinking long and hard about this. Like, he's going to come back and play, it feels like. Man, how do you approach this if you're a family member, a teammate, if you're him, the individual? Because there's so many angles to this thing. Like, clearly, when the guy gets knocked as many times as he had, I don't know.
You know, I've been to all kinds of reunions, guys that I played with, you know, and I'm still, like, fortunately, I'm good. But a lot of my teammates aren't. You know, the hits, and some guys are just more susceptible to concussions. I mean, Ron Jaworski is 70-something years old now. Nobody, I mean, LT, you're talking about LT, like, he got whacked his whole career. He's fine. You know, some guys are just more susceptible to brain injuries and concussions and the after effects of that. And look, I feel like Tua is just going to play, and it's going to happen again.
Yeah.
Like last year, okay, we played 18 games. It never happened. But I feel like it's going to happen. And you just can't – like, you can't – no. So I talked to a player just recently. He's a great player, and he just had his fourth concussion in 13 years. I go, when's enough? He goes, look, I go, are you concerned? He goes, I signed up for this. No, it's easy to say that if you're 35, I signed up for this.
Right.
Because you're not thinking when you're 50 or 60 or your family or anything else like that. But you have to think about that. Like, Tua is a wonderful person. Everybody has to have a career after your career. Like, it doesn't end just because your career ended. You've got another life to live or other lives. Like, you have to think about your composition. And it's if I was Tua, I would advise him not to play.
But I think the hard part, and I agree with everything you're saying, but what if this just makes the individual happy? So, for example, me and B talk about this. You know, my dad passed away this year. Yeah. He loved sugar, like loved it. And I would say, Dad, it's going to kill you. It's going to kill you. He says, Joe, I like the sugar in my drink. Or, for example, what if playing football literally makes him happy?
Here's the difference between sugar and brain injuries. Is you can still enjoy your life and go play golf and go to the 49er games and see, you know, all that. And you can, okay, you get diabetes, whatever the issue is. But you can still live until until it gets taken from you. But it's a quality of life once your brain starts to non-function.
Right.
You know, like I just talked to a Hall of Famer this summer, right? I don't want to mention his name right now, but he's like right now, and he's young, like he's 50. But right now he has to write every note down in his phone so he can remember everything the next day.
Wow.
And he's 50.
Wow.
He's a Hall of Fame player. He's a great, look, I mean, he played the game the right way, all that stuff, but you know, he knows that it's not going to be there forever. We just saw Brett Favre, you know, come out and say, you know, what his condition is. Like, some guys, the quality of life is just not going to be good.
What So I don't understand this with a concussion, right? What goes through that protocol? What is like Tua or anybody suffers a concussion? Like Malik Nabers hasn't played the last
right.
2 weeks.
Yep.
And he hasn't been cleared. So what are they going through?
There's a baseline testing that everybody right. has. And so you go back and you take these cognitive tests, and they measure it against your baseline when you're healthy.
Mm.
And so if it's not up to where it has to be, that it could be one thing. It could be symptoms, headaches, you know, nausea, all that kind of stuff. It could be some of that. Like Lane Johnson got a concussion in New Orleans week 3. And, you know, he's texting me that he's thrown up in the locker room.
Ugh.
And so, like, that, he knew he had a concussion. I don't know if it was diagnosed yet, but, you know, he was basically saying, I'm not coming back out. You know, and so, you know, I'll never forget this. Aaron Rodgers had one year in Green Bay. And they said one of the remedies was to basically stay in a dark room.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let the sunlight really mm-hmm. affect you, right? So that week, he stayed in this dark room because all he did was visualize the offense, like in the way it's supposed to be. Like he put his brain on football, took his brain off the field, out of the game plan, all that stuff. And that was the year that he won a Super Bowl, like 2010, whatever
wow.
year that was.
Wow.
And he said the offense never crystallized like it did while that period huh. of where he was just rehabilitating in a dark room.
Damn, that's insane. So yeah. Tua. Because we saw the hit against Buffalo Thursday Night Football.
Look, what is that? Hit the ground. You know, and you know, concussion is, you know, your brain
yep.
sits in a fluid inside the cranium.
Mm-hmm.
There's a body of fluid, and it's a whiplash, right? It's the same thing that happens in the car. You know, you get whiplashed, and so the brain goes up against the cranium and gets bruised. So there's varying different degrees mm-hmm. of damage, depending mm-hmm. what part of the brain, hindbrain, forebrain, whatever, the cerebellum, whatever it might be. And there's a bruising of it. And that's the first one. Then there's can the brain recover? And so nobody really knows what CTE is until you pass away.
Right.
They can't diagnose it while you're alive.
And then there's the component of the financials where he signs a big fat extension over $200 million. And now Miami's got to think on the football field and say, man, we got a quarterback who may, one more concussion. He may be done. We may see Steve Young eyes closed on Monday Night Football after Lawrence Phillips missed a block.
But it's also the weird things that happen with
exactly.
his hand.
Yeah,
as soon as you see
yeah.
like all of that.
The fingers just going in different directions.
Like, when we first time we saw it, like it scared the hell out of me because I'd never seen that before in a concussion. You know, I've probably had some where you're going up to the line of scrimmage and you're seeing double.
Yeah, you get
and
your
you're
bell
just trying
rung,
to
yeah.
like get your bell rung. That's what we used to call it, right? And now you're like seeing this disfiguration of Tua's hands. Like, it looks terrible.
They've got to have a backup plan, Shasky.
I don't know what it is. And you know, the league can't be happy. I've had 3 concussions in there. They all are different. Yep. Some lasted weeks.
Yep.
Some I was good 3-4 days later. It's a trip. That brings me to CMC, which is different. Okay, CMC has got the bilateral Achilles tendonitis.
Yes.
Now, I've seen reports it's linked to an Achilles rupture. I've seen others say it has zero effect on the Achilles, whatever. What do you do in this situation? I mean, even if you take a ton of time off, you could re-injure one of these legs and have an Achilles tear, and then you're out for a year, year and a half, who knows how long, like Dre Greenlaw. I mean, do you just come back and just see where it goes? Do you wait till the end of the season? Like, how do you navigate the CMC injury?
I don't know, because I don't know how severe, if it is a damage to the Achilles tendon where it's weakened. I got to believe if you're not working out, because that's the worst thing you could do, it's got to rest. Whatever the rehabilitation is the Achilles weakened by the tendonitis and the inflammation of that tendon? And if it is, then you don't know because you can't really do anything to test it. And so he just overworked both tendons. And we all see all the stuff on Instagram about what he's doing. And
yeah.
like he does the same stuff game day. Like he's doing these hops and these jumps and, you know, and it, right now it's heavily inflamed. The last thing you want to do is start taking these anti-inflammatories, whatever, to take the inflammation out, because then are you masking the injury?
Yeah.
So that's not good. So I think it's a very difficult path to navigate here, Joe. And the last thing you want is to put him out there at any point and something happens to the
Achilles.
Yep. Ed McCaffrey says he's just the hardest part about Chris McCaffrey is you got to scale him back. It's hard to scale him back. And the guy just wants to
but
work,
that's
work,
what
work,
got
work,
him
work.
To the position he's in.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's tough to tell him, hey, rein it back. Don't work hard.
I know.
Shanahan made the joke at his wedding where he's like, he's probably thinking about his footwork walking down the aisle, getting married. I mean, it's unbelievable here with Chris McCaffrey. So hopefully he's all right here. But again, I think it's a bonus if they get anything from him this season. And obviously the impact has been massive.
Well, I would say,
they're
like,
12 of 27 in the red zone, Baldy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the red zone thing is tricky in this league right now because, I mean, there's some things defenses can do where you can look to the two-receiver side, three-receiver side, and if they're sitting in these quarter looks and there's just in zone and there's seven guys with basically their toes on the goal line, like there's – and, you know, as fast as these guys can react, it's just hard some days. I mean, you could drop all the red zone offense. If you could get them in predictable situations, a little easier against man to go find your man beater, get the ball out. But that's where you're seeing Brock, like, literally scramble so often down there in the red zone, just waiting for somebody to uncover.
We asked you about who you would want to run your team, like Sean McVay. And now I want to ask, like, if you were to pick any scheme for your defense, you're starting from scratch, so you don't have any personnel that dictates this, what's the scheme you would run on defense in this modern day?
What Brian Flores is doing in Minnesota is tricky. It's really tricky. Now, Detroit's going up there. You know, Minnesota's undefeated. They're playing with the lead. So Brian's like a little bit, but you really, it could be any down. They're putting seven up there at the line of scrimmage. You don't really know who's coming. They want you to go max protection, and then they're going to bail, and they're going to get seven or eight guys covering against your three receivers.
Is it a 5-2, 3-4, 4-3? What is it?
They literally have, it's the Golden State Warriors. It's positionless football.
Huh. Yep.
Pat Jones, Josh Metellus. You go through the list of guys. Andrew Van Ginkle. Like, these guys are playmakers in this scheme. And it's in the back end, you got Harrison Smith,
yep,
who's got 35 career interceptions, Cade Bynum. Like, these guys are very good on the back end and just protecting, keeping every, like, you know, it's just Star Wars, keeping everything in front of you. Like, it's tricky right now.
Stephon Gilmore as well, who had the game-winning interception
Gilmore,
in London.
I mean, but Gilmore now, like, I did a show years ago. We used to film it at the Pro Bowl and Super Bowl called Film Sessions.
Oh,
and
I remember
sit down
that.
With these
yeah.
guys. Yep. And it was an NFL Films production. And I did not know Stephon Gilmore. It was the year after his Defensive Player of the Year. And he's pretty quiet. But he comes in. The guy, he will blow your mind at how smart he is and how much football he knows. And by formation, splits, coordinators, receiver, routes you can run, runs you. He is... like, he makes everybody smarter.
That doesn't surprise me. Belichick's number one attribute for all of his players, intelligence, yep, in terms of scheme and being able to... So when I listen to McCourty talk on Sunday nights,
he's
amazing. I think he's brilliant.
He's fantastic at what he does.
He's really good.
McCourty is fantastic. Let's see get to some calls here. We'll rat-a-tat-tat some of these guys here. Let's go to Oreo Cookie in Oakland.
Hey,
he's been
Oreo
on hold for a while. We love Oreo Cookie.
What's up,
Oreo Cookie?
Hey, what up, Baldy? What up, Shasky, Monte?
What's up, baby?
Happy Friday. Baldy, I got a couple of questions for you. Put on your general manager hat. Looking at the 49ers here, they're shown to give up some draft picks for an unproven guy coming out of college. Shout out Trey Lance. Do you give three first-round picks for Max Crosby?
No. No, I mean, look, Max and it would be unfair to put Max and Nick on the same field together. I don't think you give up three first-round picks, and not because Max isn't worth it. And Raiders will do that deal, I think, right now. Max wants to be a Raider for life. There's no question about it. But if he had a chance, probably, on those conditions, I mean, he would go wherever he would be. But if you put Max in this defense, like, I'm putting him in the Super Bowl right now.
Wow. What else you got, Oreo Cookie?
That's a heavy price to pay.
What else you got, Oreo Cookie?
For this game on the weekend, man, I'm looking at Trent Williams directly at you. Your Super Bowl sucked, buddy. I want to run it 20 times to the left side.
Mm. Well, he had the penalty, the one penalty that was costly. I don't know. Some of those penalties, I don't know. Look, They're a left-handed team. They like to go left behind him and Banks. Like, no, there's no question about it. So you're going to see that. You're going to see some of those runs and some of those play-action passes and stuff.
What about with Dominic Pooney now? Because, like, Chris Jones lined up over that right guard over and over and over again. It felt like in certain situations. Does Pooney kind of change the map for them up front?
Or does Chris Jones go somewhere else?
Great question.
Because it feels like he finds a great
question. Chris Jones is going to find the pigeon. All right, it might be the right tackle.
It might be Colton McKivitt.
He can play a wide nine.
Right.
Like, the guy is just different than everybody else. Because nobody has his size and power and footwork. Like, his movement is elite. Last game they played was against New Orleans. And literally, New Orleans had backup centers and guards. They literally grabbed him. Like, every play. Literally grabbed him, but they didn't call anything. Maybe they call one holding call, but like that's all they could do to try to slow him down.
Every time I watch him, you know, like when you go to Disneyland, they got Mickey Mouse has this huge hand.
Yeah,
he's got this huge hand, and before the linemen can get their hand, he just bangs them on the shoulder.
He's great at grabbing wrists.
Yeah,
he grabs wrists, and once what that does is it lifts the offensive lineman's center of gravity up.
Well, they ran this stat on ESPN on that Monday Night Football.
Yeah, give it to me.
And I screenshot it. Look at me, I'm a maniac. I got the purse right there, but it's Chris Jones, 108 incompletions forced.
That's
by pressure.
Incredible.
That's the most by a D-tackle in the last 5 years.
He's the most dominant interior player in this league right now. And it's not about sacks. It's just about pressure and what he does. Like, Joe Burrow is still running for his life when they played, in the championship game. There's nobody else built like him that moves like him and plays the volume of plays that he plays.
It felt like he came out of nowhere. It felt like, you know, we were talking about all these other D-tackles and Dominican Sue and all these other guys.
Yeah.
And then, so, you know, Chris Jones, the preseason game, when the Niners played him in 2019 in the Super Bowl, they had a preseason game at Arrowhead Stadium. I'll never forget it. And Sasky thinks I'm a maniac for this. Jimmy Garoppolo's leading him down, and Chris Jones had a batted ball on the fourth down in the preseason game.
Yeah.
And then, so he's doing it again in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. And I was like, wait, he was doing this in a preseason game.
Sure,
we didn't adjust to this.
He's a Mississippi State kid, and if you want defensive linemen, Jeffrey Simmons, Fletcher Cox, go to Mississippi
State. Montez Sweat,
yeah. They've been putting him out. Now, that defense line coach, he was so good, I think Nick took him to Alabama. I think his name is Brian Baker. He might be at Alabama still, I'm not sure.
Baldy, you are just a wealth of knowledge. I love it. It's like you just start going deeper and deeper into the rabbit hole.
I love the positional coaches stuff.
Yeah.
Like Bruce Arians, quarterback coach, with Phil Simms, that famous clip. Who's this quarterback coach? Bruce Arians. Who is this guy?
The other day, I hear that Caleb has a really good game. Not the one in London, but the week before. So I'm pretty good friends with Caleb. I'm going to do that game in Washington next week, Chicago, Washington.
Wow.
Caleb and Jaden.
It's going to be good.
They've already flexed it.
Yeah.
The 425 window. And rightfully so. But I remember, I hear that Caleb called his quarterback coach right after he watched the game. And he just had, this 300-yard game, and Chicago put up a bunch of points. And this is what you need about Caleb. He's critical of himself on his footwork, where his eyes was in this play. He should have gone here. He's already – he's not celebrating a win or playing well or a second win in a row or anything. He's, fixing what he did wrong. And that's what all players should do. Not all of them do it.
So you're older like us in the sense of, you remember what the 80s were like when Washington was a powerhouse and when the Chicago Bears were powerhouses.
Yeah.
I said on Monday, we came in here, I go, it's just nice as a fan of the league to have watchable teams in Washington and Chicago where they have functional quarterbacks.
Yeah.
It feels like hope has been restored to these major markets.
They ran this play to Cole Kmet for the opening touchdown in London last week.
Oh, it's beautiful.
The play is unbelievable.
Yep.
It's not like they just invented it. It's been used before, but it was executed so well with Keenan Allen coming in ghost motion and then the fake to DeAndre Swift and hit Cole Kmet down the seam. And I just said, Chicago Bear fans, you've been around for 100 years. You've never seen a play like this. I don't know if you're ready for this. But this is a brand new day in Chicago. Because they've never had a passing offense.
No.
They've never had anybody where Jim McMahon was great, but Jim McMahon, they've had guys.
Cutler had moments.
Jay Cutler had some moments.
Yeah, moments.
But he didn't really have the personality you want tonight. Like, Caleb has got a smile on his face every day. Caleb knows he's good. But now Caleb's improving. He's winning from the pocket. They got a run game. Like, it's coming together.
It is coming together.
And I'm
together.
Like, Chicago, just rejoice. Just enjoy this. Like, you've never seen this before. Get your tickets now, because it's going to be the biggest ticket in town.
It is, no doubt. And they have a defense out there in Chicago,
defense.
Too. Defense is underrated. That division is. I want to get to that division in just a second. I know we want to get to the coaching tree here. Let's get to some calls. RJ Fairfield, then we'll get to Fazil in Fremont. RJ, my main man. What's going on, RJ?
What's up, Baldy? It's chest day today, man, so I'm getting my workout in.
All right, man.
Chest.
Angle are you hitting? Yeah. You hitting with the flies? With incline,
bench, what are we rocking?
No, it's straight old school, you know, but I'm using the Smith machine, it's a home workout,
right.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Hey, Baldy, quick question. So 95.7 is big on prayers before game day.
Yeah.
And what player on the 49ers need to say the prayers before this game?
Oh, this is a Fred Warner game all the way. This is Fred. Fred, he's going to lead the huddle, like down there on the field before they break to go to the locker room. They come and Fred's leading this one. Fred knows what this one is all about. It's like him and Mahomes. Like the middle of the field is his. Here comes Kelsey. Like, I expect the ball to get knocked loose.
RJ's talking about the biggest prayer. Who needs to say a prayer? I was thinking about Colt McKivitz. If number 95 lines up in front of him, I'm thinking, like, you know what? It's like Reggie White lined up. It's like, oh, dear God.
You know what's funny about that? Like, so I remember I was playing in Indianapolis, and we're playing Philadelphia. We're 0-3. Like, our season's, like, on the brink already. We're playing Philadelphia at the vet.
Oh.
And I'm the right guard. And Reggie either lined up over the right tackle or over the center in a Bear defense. That's it. That's where he lined up. The first play of the game, he lines up over me.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm like,
was he talking to you?
No, he did talk during the game, but not to me. So I'll tell you the story. So my right tackle is Kevin Call. We called him the Creature, right? And he was like a
great
very
nickname.
Like skitsy guy to begin with. Like, he was just a head case. So the whole first quarter, Reggie lines up over me, and I'm like, what the hell's Reggie? Like, he thinks I'm the weak link. So I grab Reggie every play, and I hold him for dear life, and he doesn't beat me. All right. So he goes back over the right tackle where he belonged. Right. I'm like, get out of here, Reggie. Like, that's not the truth. So it was funny because we became teammates in Philly years later. But anyways, he goes over the right tackle, and he's like, he slams Kevin Call like over the pile, like just a hump move, right? And he says, well, so we're getting out of the pile, and Reggie in that deep voice, he goes, meet me after the game. So Kevin comes after into the huddle after the play. He's like, hey, did you hear that? And I'm like, yeah. He said, meet me after the game. So Kevin's like, well, what's he talking about? Like, what's he want to do? So he's like nervous. So I know Reggie has his prayer service after the game.
Yeah,
he wants to, because Kevin had some issues off the field. So he wants to help him, right? So, but I didn't let Kevin know. I wanted him to be edgy, right? So the whole game is like, so we win on the final play, right? Trudeau hits Billy Brooks. In the back of the end zone, we win the game in the final play.
Wow.
So Kevin's like, he's not even celebrating. Like, I'm like, we won a game, we won a game. So Kevin's like, hey, dude, you coming with me? You got my back? I'm like, yeah, just get out there. So all Reggie wanted was Kevin to, like, just meet him for the prayer service after the game. I kept him on edge the whole game.
That's hilarious. Yeah. He wants to be after the game, beat Reggie White. Was Jerome Brown on that defense back then?
Jerome had passed away in 91.
Okay.
Like, I came to the Eagles in 92.
So I've heard legendary stories from players who played against him and from him, from his time with interviews and whatnot, that Larry Allen used to say, you got to get off the tracks when the train's coming through. And he would line up, he'd get into his stance, he'd go, woo, woo, like, as in the play was going to go right through whoever was in front of him.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was a tractor trailer, man. I mean, Larry, nobody... At NFL Films, our film in my machine goes back to 2005. He was in San Francisco then.
2006. It's the greatest offensive lineman season in my eyes I'd ever seen in person. It was when Gore ran for 1,600 yards. Yep. He was outstanding.
It was Frank's best year.
Yep.
You know, and they were like inseparable.
Yes.
Like, they went everywhere together.
Norm Turner.
Like, that was like an amazing. And that was at the end of Larry's career.
Yep.
Like, the very end. I remember I was doing a 49er game that year. And so I'm doing a game with Dick Stockton, I think. So, So I want Larry Allen to come into the meeting, right, to a production meeting. And Dick's like, why are you getting Larry Allen? I go, because he's the best player in the league. He goes, yeah, but he doesn't say anything. I've had him in the... I go, well, if you don't like the meeting, Dick, then just leave. You're the one, too. I'm sitting here with Larry. I'm talking to Larry Allen. I got Larry Allen laughing so hard. We were talking about bench pressing, lifting weights, knocking people down. And, you know, Larry's just like that deep laugh of his. I had so much... Like, the thing went on for 30 minutes. And everybody's like, Baldy, man, like, honestly, you and him are having a great time. But none of us are. I'm like, Larry was unbelievable, man.
Bad. Sonoma State.
Sonoma State.
Isn't that incredible?
They don't even have a football program anymore.
It's just incredible. Sonoma State. He was, I'm telling you, I'm not joking. Like, I've watched some great with Trent, everybody. Larry Allen, for my money, was one of the greatest seasons I've ever seen in my life.
When he passed away, I think last year, it broke my heart, man. Everybody, like, because we never, he was the gold standard because he could play center, he could play guard, he could tackle. Like, he's the best that's ever played.
Wow. Wow.
Anthony Munoz, you could, like, take him out there.
Munoz was awesome.
He was unbelievable, too.
The Pro Bowl videos of him just bench pressing and being in those skills competitions are legendary.
Yeah.
Legendary. It was hard to hate him, even though he was a Cowboy. It was hard for me as a Niner fan to say, yeah, I hate Larry Allen. No, it's like, damn, Larry Allen's a badass. Rest in peace to him.
Gosh,
rest
Nate,
in peace those Cowboy 49er games. Those Cowboy 49er games back then. Like, the talent level, the Hall of Famers. Like, it was an all-star game.
Yeah, well, people don't even bring up Jay Novacek. He was awesome.
Oh, yeah, he was great.
Novacek was awesome.
He killed him in that 92 game.
Awesome.
NFC Championship.
Alvin Harper.
So I was in Philly. We won our first playoff game that year against the Saints. Second game was in Dallas against the Cowboys. Their first year they won the Super Bowl. And, like we had Seth Joyner to cover Jay Novacek. Seth was an unbelievable player. Borderline Hall of Fame player. I don't know if he is or not. But, like, his job was Novacek. I mean, what Aikman did with Novacek, I mean, if it was 3rd and 11, Novacek was catching a pass for 12. Like, it was unreal.
So we're looking this up, and we'll get to it on the other side. Now that we're talking coaches, we'll get to the coaching tree, but Rich Kotite was your coach that year. I got to get into that.
Rich Kotite from New York City?
Yeah. Absolutely. We've got to get into that on the other side. That's coming up, brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises.
This is Oreo Cookie from Oakland, California, and it's plain to see you can't change me because I'm going to be a roaster for life.
We're back.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Man, we got an audience in here. Let's go. Let's get some noise in here. Look at him, man. We got Rick. We got everybody in here,
Let's
man. Heidi, what's up, Heidi? We got a lovely wife. How do you get dragged out of the house to come with us? We'll talk to you in a second
Purdy,
here. Morning Rose is
Purdy,
back. We got the Purdy jersey.
Purdy.
Purdy jersey selling like hotcakes around here.
Yeah, they are.
They're selling like hotcakes.
And Baldy's like eating a hotcake.
Yeah, let him eat this bacon burrito. Let him get through the bacon burrito. We'll do what we got to do. Get the headset on, buddy. I'm going to eat my burrito in a second here. We got some calls here. Tears to the North Bay, Verducci, Fazil. Let's go to Fazil and Fremont. Let's go to Fazil and Fremont. What's happening, man? Get that headset out, Baldy. Fazil wants to ask you a question.
Hi, Bonta, Shasky, and Baldy. Good to see you guys. Remember, it's Fazil for me from Fremont Bank when I saw you guys over there back earlier before.
Fremont Bank,
yeah,
baby.
Hope you guys are doing. Yeah, I hope you guys are doing good, man. It's a big week for the Niners. I hope we get a win, you know, get back on track and, you know, get this win, go into the bye week after playing Dallas, 5-3, get the road, get McCaffrey back, get healthy. I did have a question for Baldy.
Yeah.
I was like, Baldy, what? It's good to finally, like, you, like, I always watch your breakdowns, enjoy your videos and your talks on here, 95.7 The Game. I just wanted to ask you, what are you looking to see from the Niners from this game? I know our ex-caller said about Fred Warner game. I was like, what are you looking to see from them to come out? Are you looking Andy Reid versus Nick Sorensen? Are you looking how Kyle's going to attack Spags this time? What are you looking forward to seeing this weekend?
Well, I think the strength of Kansas City's team. I mean, obviously there's Mahomes and Andy Reid after bye, and, you know, you saw what Kareem Hunt and Juju did. You know, in the last game, you know, they just kind of got into the lineup. But I always think, like, there's a great matchup between Spags and Kyle. And just really how you handle the pressure and what they do to pierce the defense and how they can finish drives. Because obviously, in overtime, they couldn't finish the drive. There was a difference in the game. Breakdown at right guard. All those kind of things are true, but I kind of want to see that matchup because I always feel like this offense, like when it's clicking, everything else will take care of itself. And so I feel like the offense has to kind of set the table in this game. And so, you know, I don't know what the status of Jordan Mason is. Is it Garendo? Is it a mix? But that's always going to start with the run game. And so how do they get that going against a pretty good front for Kansas City?
You know, we have a little segment that we're working on. It's called calling out names. And not that you're trying to, like, throw someone under the bus. It's more like, hey, I need you to have a big game, right? I'm calling you out. I need you to have a big game in a good way. Like Nick Bosa, every time they face Kansas City, the one time he had the groin injury, that was during the regular season, he doesn't seem to get home. But he's creating a lot of pressure. Like, what do you make of that? I know Niner fans crying about holding calls. Like, I get it. And I'm right there with him. Like, he's getting tackled. He's getting chokehold. What's going on with Bosa against Kansas City specifically?
Well, I think, look, I think if you look at Juwan Taylor and you look at Wanya Morris, the two tackles, like, they're just okay. Mahomes bails him out all the time with his movement. And it's hard. Like, Nick wants to get to Mahomes. Like, in his first Super Bowl that they lost, I mean, here he is on 3rd and 15, you know, and yeah, he runs a stunt with Buckner. Like, they grab the hell out of him. And, you know, Mahomes just launches the rocket to Tyreek. And, you know, they lost the game as a result. They're not going to call the holding calls. Nick knows that. He doesn't. He's not one of these guys whining or crying about it. He never does. I mean, he just gets up. He's playing a lot more plays this year. He's playing a high volume of plays. He's probably playing 85% of the snaps right now, which is a lot. And so they need him out there. But it's got to be, like, he needs Floyd to step up. He needs Malik Collins to step. He can't just do it by himself. They're going to chip him. They're going to send the protection that way. They know where he's at. He's going to go right side, left side. But, you know, he's not a guy that's just a magically just going to beat these guys in 1.8 seconds and get to Mahomes.
Especially that
you
got
to get Mahomes to hold the ball.
Does that wide nine would Bosa be better in the traditional 4-3, or does the wide nine suit Bosa perfectly?
If it suits him, although, you know, like, there was a time when he was really wide nine and everybody was chipping him. You know, like on some of these, like, toss cracks, and he didn't see the chip and he was just getting cracked too often. So, like, there's a fine line between how wide you get.
Well, I guess you've watched every snap of Nick's career. He's one of your favorite players, I would assume. How would you grade this individual season thus far? It's early, obviously, but on the Bosa scale, A, B, C, like, how do you judge him?
This game against Seattle is probably the best game I've seen him play.
In a while? And in how long?
Years. I mean, since he was a defensive player of the year.
Wow.
Like,
wow.
That was, I mean, he got to Geno Smith some way, I don't know, at least a dozen times.
It felt like the first three plays of the game, he dominated. What I loved about Bosa in the last game, because I called out, I had a clip went viral, people were coming from my head, because I called out Bosa.
He loves when he goes viral.
No, I don't. I can't stand it, because you get all called names, and you're like, oh, boy, my family's reading this stuff. They're, hey, are you okay? I'm fine. I can handle myself. But the problem is, we're in this position, we can't talk back, you know what I'm saying, because it looks bad. Whatever. But Bosa, I thought he was the most important player this year for the 49ers because of the lack of depth at edge, the lack of depth on his defensive line. He's the highest paid player. Mm-hmm. What happened last season, coming in 3 days before Pittsburgh. Excuses, hey, I'm working on things. Well, we don't want to hear that. We want to see you get after the quarterback.
Right.
We see T.J. Watt. We see Myles Garrett swiping at the football left and right. And I do see Nick Bosa swiping at the ball a lot more this season. But I thought that Seattle game against the run, forget the pass rush for a second, against the run, said it again, because there's too many times I'm seeing teams get too comfortable running that number 97.
Well, I mean, Kevin Walker did nothing against him. Now, they didn't really stay after it very often, but, like, he shut down the run. And, you know, he's got Forsyth out there. I mean, he's a backup. You know, I mean, but he beat Charles Cross, too, who's like, he was drafted at the top of the draft to be a bona fide franchise left tackle. And, you know, he couldn't do much to stop him. I feel like, Nick, I think the offseason really helped him. Like, I saw him training in Fort Lauderdale in June a lot. And he was, like, him and his brother were getting after it every day. Like, I think missing training camp did help hurt him all year last year.
Wow.
He misses Hargrave right now. They miss that inside presence.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Givens has given them what they've got. Some of these guys, they're doing the best they can. Evan Anderson, whoever's out
Malik
there.
Malik Collins.
Malik is a pretty good player, though. You need help. Like, he needs Floyd to be really good. Like, they've had 10 days to get ready. Like, this should be the best that we've seen him.
Do you think there's going to be a team out there that, because we're seeing trades left and right in the NFL these days. It's a new NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Guys at the deadline. It feels like Major League Baseball or something. Guys are making deadline deals. Is there, you think there's a team out there from what you know, and you don't have to name the team, you don't have to name the player, but do you think there's going to be movement from defensive personnel, where teams are going to be looking like Aiden Hutchinson just got hurt with Detroit?
Well, Hassan Reddick's going to get moved. Hassan Reddick's going to get moved. Now, I don't know if I would take him. You know, I just question whether he really loves football to just miss the season.
Yeah, wow.
Like, I understand contracts are contracts, but you have a contract. It's not like you're a free agent. Like, you have a deal for 10 or 12 million, whatever it is, and you're willing to miss the season?
Yeah.
Like, the only other guy that's ever done it is Le'Veon Bell. I've never seen a guy sit out a season.
On that same note, like, looking at the defense, could you make the argument this is one of those games for Nick Sorensen that he could, like, win over the fan base? Because we are being crushing defensive coordinators in this market. We did it, like, about 15 years ago with offensive coordinators with Alex Smith.
Mark Trestman.
Oh, it's this coordinator and that coordinator. And it feels like
in the 90s.
It just feels like right now the defensive coordinator spot is under a white-hot light. Like, is this a big game for him?
Yeah, it is. Because, I mean, Spags is very consistent about how he gets to the quarterback. Very consistent. And you could draw up eight different pressures every week that affect the quarterback. Wow. And we're not seeing that from Nick. And we know that if they just play like they did with Vance last year, if you just play a front four and try to get home with four, or maybe add Fred Warner to the, you know, to the mix, it's not enough. It's just not enough. I think that you have a guy like Diamador Lenore, who is a phenomenal player and getting better because he's really got a defined role right now. Like, that guy in the pass rush, like, how are you going to shake him loose? And how are you going to cover the slot receiver? And how can you get it so Mahomes doesn't see it pre-snap? Like, some of those things have to be disguised. And I would think that they've had 10 days to get ready. You've got to get quick pressure to Mahomes to force him to either move or get the ball out of his hands fast.
What has been successful against Mahomes when he does struggle? Because at times, like, he's Mahomes, so no doubt.
But he's thrown some bad picks.
He's thrown some bad picks. The numbers, we were doing the numbers yesterday. I couldn't believe it since the start of the regular season in 2023. Purdy's thrown 40 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. Mahomes at 33 and 20, and the yardage is not there. Now, you can say the weapons and this and that, but Mahomes has been pedestrian at times. But we know fourth quarter, you don't want him with the ball down 6 points with a minute left. You don't want that. But what have teams done to stymie him and slow him down?
Well, I mean, look, when he moves and he moves off his spot, he can be dangerous and he can run, you know, for first downs and extend drives, and he can find, you know, players down the field that not many people can find because of his arm, but it also gets him in trouble. It gets Josh Allen in trouble. These guys that want to move, and at times, not as much, but at times it's gotten Brock Purdy in trouble. So these guys see the field, and that's good that they see the field. But they also try to do too much sometimes. Yeah. And it's just a balance between when is the play over and when do you try to make the great play.
See, there was a couple of plays for Purdy where he escaped it. He's running around, and he just threw it away. And I'm like, good, good. It's okay to just negate the big loss. It's okay to live to see another down. And I think that's part of the maturation process. Not every play has to be a grand slam.
It's decision-making. It's decision-making. And you don't always make the right decision. But Mahomes, like, you know, Brett Favre's the all-time interceptor leader.
Yeah.
But he's also the four-time MVP of the league. So, like, there's a fine line between, okay, forcing it. Like, if, for example, what was the game? I don't have the schedule for me. What was the game where Kittle caught the ball in the end zone?
Oh, the New England game?
New England game. Yep. Like, the catch is unreal, right? But the next week, they threw the same pass to the other side of the end zone, and, like, he doesn't come down with it. And it gets intercepted, red zone interception. So I forget which game that was.
Arizona.
So, but, like, the week before, he makes the catch. And you put the same type jump ball out there, and he doesn't come down with it. So, you know, you have to kind of live with it sometimes.
Absolutely.
Let's get a couple calls in here before we take calls from our audience here. They're going to come up here to the stick mic, ask Baldy anything here as they're live.
Don't be
at 85-70 game.
Hey,
don't be shy.
Let's
get the burritos.
Let's
get the burritos.
No,
forget that.
Let's
forget the clapping. Just save some food for us, all right? Baldy needs about three more burritos here.
Yeah.
He's ready to roll. All right, let's go to Verducci in the El Dorado Hills. Verducci, what's happening?
What's going on, fellas, baby? It is pulsating up here in the EDH. Baldy, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Morning roasters, baby, that are there, baby. I feel your energy. We are pumped, and I'll be there on Sunday, Section 315. So, Shasty, I'm taking my wife to her first ever regular season football game. So we'll come by and say hello. But Baldy, my question to you is, I think the game's going to be won in the trenches with the defensive line and the offensive line in this game. But do you think it's a bigger game for the 49er players or Shanahan? Because at times I think when Shanahan, the last couple Super Bowls, he tends to get in his own way. Sometimes it's the clock management. Sometimes it's not calling the right plays, going away with stuff that is working. And so that's my question to you. And, Baldy, have a great call.
Thank you.
On Sunday. Love you all. and I'll see you guys Sunday.
Sounds good. Bigger game for Shanahan.
It's one that's never going to go away until Kyle wins the Super Bowl.
Ugh.
It's just not going to go away. Atlanta, San Francisco here. Until he wins the Super Bowl, it's never going to go away, and it's always going to be brought up. So, I mean, it's just it was the same thing with Andy Reid. I was in Philly when Andy went to, you know, five NFC championship games. They lost, you know, three of them. They lost the Super Bowl. And it was with Andy all the way. And then he gets linked with Mahomes and this general manager and the greatness around him. And now he's the best ever.
What's the big difference for Andy Reid?
Yeah.
Whether it be
Mahomes.
Mahomes, that's it?
No, but it,
like, look, nothing against...
It's just Mahomes.
He can give this quarterback anything, and he can take what Andy gives him, and then he can take what Andy gives him and then create on his own.
Wow.
Like Andy said to me, honestly, I think it was the first year he was starting. He goes, his greatest asset, Baldy, are his eyes. He sees everything. Like, no matter what you're doing to him, he still sees the whole field. And if you take, like, a basic IQ test, there's always a part of this IQ test that you take that is spatial relations. So you could say, okay, here's all your audience in this room right now. All right, now, close your eyes and tell me where's number 13 at. You know, and, like, can you point it out? Like, I think Mahomes would ace that test over anybody else.
Let me take this a step further then. Okay. Hypothetically, you were talking about Robert Saleh earlier, saying, he's not that great of a head coach. Had I given Robert Saleh Patrick Mahomes, is he still a great player, a good player? Are they winning games? Like, what?
Like, I don't think Mahomes would be have three Super Bowl wins.
Of course.
Without Andy.
Of course.
Like, if you gave him Saleh in New York, you get, like, it's just a perfect storm. It's Kansas City. It's a small market, but it's the only game in town. It's going from Tyreek to Kelsey to, you know, they fixed their offensive line in one draft. They got Creed.
Humphrey, yeah.
They got Trey. I mean, that interior is as good as there is in this league. Andy has morphed his offense right now into a running offense.
Mm-hmm.
They've thrown it 160 times. They run it 150 times. Like, he's never been 51-49 ever. But that's what's winning for him right now.
That's the formula. He's playing to his personnel there. So you think the Mahomes is the biggest difference in Philadelphia? What went wrong in Philadelphia for Andy? Was it clock management? Was it lack of running game?
If you look at the Super Bowl against New England, okay, in Jacksonville, and you look at McNabb, like, they had matchups like Westbrook against one of the inside linebackers, Roman Pfeiffer, whoever it was, and New England, he got exactly what he wanted. And McNabb didn't make the throw. Like, he just didn't make it. And then, you know, they got late in the game, and Joe Buck was doing a game. I'll never forget. Buck's doing a game, and they're, like, in this, like, laissez-faire, like, speed of the game, and they need two scores. And they're not going to get time for two scores. Joe Buck is calling it out, and it's, like, some guys can just handle that, and some guys can't.
Wow, that's just so fascinating.
Because I thought McNabb was a borderline Hall of Famer, but the stories that come out.
But I'm not here to
crush it. Yeah, no doubt.
But, I mean, he Donovan won a lot of games, and he was a great player. He played hurt. He was a good leader. He was. But Mahomes is just, you know, he's
next level.
He's a Hall of Fame first ballot.
Okay, we did this exercise the other day. A minute to go, no timeouts, all the weapons are the same. Who are you handing the ball to as your quarterback to win you the game? All time.
Oh, I mean, all time?
All time.
I mean, it's hard to go against Joe.
Okay.
Thank you, Baldy. He's got some sense, man.
No, I mean,
thank
you look at the Cincinnati game.
You know, recency bias out here, Baldy. Yeah. We got all these new fans out here, not these.
I said I'd probably take Mahomes over Brady, and there's an argument to be made for Brady and Joe, obviously. You can't go wrong with any of them. We all agree. But, like, I would, and again, he's the two-time champion. He might win three.
Baldy, yeah. I got my guys, Carter and Spadoni. They're like 21 years old, wet behind the ear. They're talking about Mahomes. Mahomes has never seen Joe.
Seven Super Bowls, Bonte, Baldy. And Joe Shasky, one Tom Brady, greatest comeback ever.
That was doing it at Notre Dame.
You know, look, I don't want to leave Tom Brady.
I know.
Forget it. I thought some things were just so obvious. But I'm in San Francisco, like, you know.
Oh, so you're placating to the crowd.
Well, a little bit. Like, I'm smart about that.
You know, we're talking about Kyle and Andy Reid, and, like, Bonte and I have been kind of breaking down, like, these coaching trees. Bill Walsh, famous for the coaching tree. We can go right down the list. There's a zillion names. And we'll get to Belichick in a second. But, like, Sean McDermott, John Harbaugh, Matt Nagy, Doug Peterson, Ron Rivera, the amount of guys that have been to Super Bowls that were from an Andy Reid type of
Marty
a tree.
Morningway.
Todd Bowles, Pat Shermer, Leslie Frazier, Spagnuolo, Brad Childress. His tree, I guess the ability to build your staff and find guys and add to it, that's a skill too. And I think that Andy is very underrated when it comes
to that.
I
remember Matt Nagy was playing like arena football, you know, and he was like, he was trying to get him, like he was trying to get him on his staff for a long time.
Really?
The offensive coordinator for the Giants right now, I'm blanking on his name right now, under Dable. Like, he was, you know, a guy that Andy wanted to get into coaching. Like, he sees these guys, and he sees their attributes and their abilities, and what would make a great head coach?
Mike Kafka.
Yeah, wow.
So
George Blanda. He's giving this to George Blanda a minute to go. That's Donnie Conkered.
Right. Look, there's some guys like Brian Billick, his first job, in coaching after, you know, his playing career ended in Dallas and playing at BYU, was with Bill Walsh in San Francisco. And he didn't even wasn't on the staff. He was just a PR intern. And his first job was like going to pick up Joe Montana at the airport when they drafted him in the third round out of Notre Dame. And Bill Walsh gave him a chance and groomed him to the point where he went with Denny Green, who was a Bill Walsh disciple, and went to Minnesota with him, and they, you know, put one of the greatest offenses together with Randy Moss and the whole thing. And, like, Billick did the same. New York Billick's tree in Baltimore. Yeah. All the guys he developed.
It's incredible. We had Mike Nolan was one of them.
Mike Nolan was one of them. Rex Ryan was on that staff. Singletary.
All these guys were with Brian.
What is it about BYU? Because I've read a lot about Steve Young and McMahon during that time. But even prior to that, you know, you had, obviously, Andy Reid, Norm Chow. There's so many guys coming out of BYU.
Coach Edwards.
LaVell Edwards. It was all LaVell. The passing game.
It's just, that's really what it comes down to. But as an offensive lineman, to throw the
ball. But if you look at BYU and they're trying to compete, you know, on a national scale, and they can't get nearly the type of linemen or players to win these games, the passing game was the equalizer.
Yep.
I played for Steve Spurrier. Like, when he was at Duke, he won a lot of games there. Like, the passing game was the equalizer. When everybody else was running the veer and the wishbone and the run game, like, LaVell was advanced to the passing
game. Did Ty Detmer win a Heisman at BYU?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ty Detmer won a Heisman. Lit it up.
Spurrier, top pick by the 49ers back in the day.
Steve Young, flamed out quarterback here.
McMahon, BYU. Yep.
Yeah.
Like, all these guys, like, they came out of LaVell's system.
Andy Reid came out of BYU.
Well, that's what I was saying. Yeah. Like, Andy Reid, as an offensive lineman, like, you would think he would want to run the ball more, but he's known for passing, and that's why I was asking.
But he you know, he knew Mike Holmgren, because Mike Holmgren coached at San Francisco State. You know, and so when Andy left BYU, like, how do I get started? Build a program. Go to San Francisco State. You'll get what you need right there, players, administration, all that. So he starts there. He goes through Northern Arizona and Missouri and some of these places. And then he gets on the staff with Holmgren in Green Bay, and he's the tight ends coach.
Wow. So you played in the heyday of the West Coast offense when the West Coast offense first got launched around the league. What was it about the West Coast offense that Bill Walsh implemented that just took the league by storm to where we see little tricklets here and there in the West Coast? We still see teams 40 years later running a version of a West Coast offense.
It was basically like Bill Walsh was in Cincinnati forever, with Mike Brown or
Paul Brown.
Paul Brown. And so, like, he wouldn't let him. He was there for like 7 or 8 years. They wouldn't let him leave. And he wanted a chance to, like, he was a late in his career when he got the head job, you know. And but he's what they did in Cincinnati, they called the West Coast because they couldn't run the ball, so the equalizer was short passes, long runs. So they devised these passing trees and these triangles to read where you could spread the field with five receivers. That helped your offensive line in protection. And then the triangles would dictate where to go with the ball. And so shallow cross, flanker drive, like all the stick, Y stick, like all these things are still basics that people still use. Even in a morphed offense right now, they still use these. Like in Kansas City, they don't call it Y stick. They call it Dash rash. Like, I don't know why, but that's Kelsey's. It's a drive starter. 5 yard turnaround, balls out. Like, let's get 5 yards of first down.
If you could, would you like to meet Taylor Swift?
Well, I mean, she's a Reading girl, you know, she's a Pennsylvania girl. Like, I suppose, like, I could be, I don't know one song of hers.
Shake it off?
I don't know one song.
I don't even know what her voice sounds like.
I didn't know a song, and he's like, all our audience knows.
She's got bangers.
I got a hole in my game when it comes to music. My daughter loves Taylor Swift. Yeah, pop culture. I'm a sports guy. That's what I do. I remember stadium names, not rap song names or anything like that. Tell me about Gillette Stadium at Foxborough. Yeah. I want to know about that. I want to know about the practice facility. What do they call it in Philadelphia?
NovaCare.
NovaCare Center. Yeah, I want the NovaCare Center. I want to know what address that is. I don't care about Taylor Swift. But my daughter loves Shake It Off.
Okay.
And she's like, Shake It Off. I play it like, it's on my playlist. It just comes on.
I don't even know what it sounds like.
That's what people say.
That's like classic bubblegum music.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And I'm singing in my car saying the haters gonna hate.
Thousands to listen to this?
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, she's selling out stadiums singing this song.
I don't get it.
But she's going to probably be at Levi's Sunday, right?
I would think so, yes. I'm sure it's a big game. It's Super Bowl rematch. I'll tell you a story, though. So I'm doing Cincinnati, Kansas. This is like, I'm tooting my own horn.
I love it. Yeah.
So listen to this.
I'm doing the Cincinnati Morning Boast.
Kansas City week two, right? So I'm down there doing my Baldy's walk before the game. I see Mahomes. I see Kelsey. Like, I see Jamar. I see Joe. I see all the guys. So I'm kind of talking. So I'm walking off the field. I got to go upstairs to a pregame show. And I'm coming through the tunnel. And in front of me just happened to be the entourage of Taylor Swift.
Oh.
So when you come through this one part in the stadium at Arrowhead, like all these fans are there. Nobody's screaming Taylor Swift, but they're screaming Baldy. Like that. So my producer is walking with me. He's like, Baldy, you know, they're talking about you. The most famous person in music
so
in the world.
What I want to know is, now that you opened it up, and you're on the field, because I love it on Instagram. I die for it. The Morning Boast. I laugh every time I see it, man. Baldy's a great follow. I have Baldy NFL on Instagram or Twitter. X is what
they
call it now.
When he's harpooning a fish in the middle of the ocean.
He sends a slideshow, and he's shaking all these stars' heads. I always want to know, who's the photographer?
Yeah, who
do you grab? Is it the same person every single week? Is it a producer?
A personal video of you and Nick Bosa on the field during the Pittsburgh thing, and then like an hour and a half later, it's posted on IG.
So my producer, Pat Kinnean. Hello, Pat. Pat is he's legendary in the music business, but he's the engineer, and he loves it. And it's funny is that he's got really bad arthritis right now, so he takes his Advil before so he can keep up and walk around and
performance enhancers.
He just knows, like, the worst thing I think with all this stuff is like these choreographed photos.
Yeah.
Like, let's take it. So he just takes, just snap stuff. I start, like, I'll see Fred. Fred will come up and probably jump on my back. You know, Juice married a girl from my hometown in Long Island, Massapequa. Massapequa girl. His wife, like, I'll check in and see how, you know, he's got a boat on the South Bay in Massapequa now. So I'll just go check in with the guys and see how they're doing. I'll talk to Brock, you know. But my buddy, he just snaps these pictures and we just use it.
It's legendary because you'll see, like, you're covering Ravens, Bengals, and Jamar Chase is smiling. I haven't seen Jamar Chase smile all season. Hey, yeah, he's smiling when he sees Baldy.
I told you, I said, Jamar, you have a great game today, man. I'm going to pump you up.
He had
I'm
going
to get you that contract.
Yeah, he had one, too. Hey, he on my fantasy team that week.
Who's the first guy you got to see? Either team. You get to Levi Stadium. You're walking around the field, and you're going to search this guy out. Coach, player,
one or two for San Francisco.
That's a Sacaroni, baby.
Trent or Fred. Like, Trent is awesome. Like, he's so good. Like, I've been following him since he came out of Oklahoma. So he knows what I do in the trenches, you know, on all this. So he follows. But Fred's just so, he's just so outgoing, man. Like, he's just no reservations at all.
Love,
you know, he's unreal, man. Like, he's just, he's the salt of the earth. And it's all about ball, you know, but he's got a smile on his face. The energy's way up. Like, I'll talk to Nick. Nick is great, but, like, Fred and Trent, like, they're my two favorites.
What about Kyle Shanahan? You ever heard of Kyle Shanahan before the game?
Kyle never comes out before a game. Like, I remember when Vic Fangio was coaching here, or coaching against San Francisco, I'd see Vic, or when he was here with Harbaugh. Like, I'll see some guys that, like, Spags will come out. I'll text Spags on Sunday. I'm like, hey, I'm doing a game, Baldy. Spags, like, and he'll come out and just say hello, and they'll go back inside. But I never see Kyle before a game, because I got to go up, you know, like, 45 minutes before the kick. So Kyle comes out with the team. He comes out about the same time that I'm going up.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of fun here. Let's take some calls real quick before we hit the break. We got you guys. You guys ready to go? Go ahead, stuff your face.
Let's go.
Eat those burritos.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.